1990 can and should bring us closer to a period of genuine peace.
Major invasion by Iraqi troops deep inside Kuwait.
We hold it as an inviolable principle that racism must be opposed.
Democracy is restored. Panama is free.
I told the truth and I paid the price. Mr. Bush did not. And we're all now going to have to pay for that.
I mean, you got a real serious problem when the chief executive officer of a city, which has a drug problem, is taking crack.
And liftoff of the space shuttle Discovery with the Hubble Space Telescope.
I do not like broccoli.
1990, the Gulf Crisis, the bridging of the superpower Gulf. Nelson Mandela freed, Charles Keating jailed. The end of Panamanian repression, the beginning of a recession. Stand by to relive it all. I'm Howard Dykus, and this is the Year in Review. 1 million soldiers converged in the Persian Gulf region in 1990 and began training for war.
This is a drill, this is a drill. General quarters, all hands, man your battle station.
Half the forces deployed in the Gulf only drilled, but the other side had actually fought. On the first day of August, Iraq invaded Kuwait.
A major invasion by the Iraqi troops deep inside Kuwait. Fighting is going on at this moment and a lot of casualties.
That Kuwaiti diplomat called on the world to help. The Iraqi ambassador to the UN called on the world to butt out.
The events currently occurring in Kuwait are an internal affair.
President Bush, the NATO allies, and most Arab states close to the action saw the invasion by Iraq as the first test of the new post-Cold War era. Bush said Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein had to be stopped, or other strongmen might wage regional wars of their own. And so,
in my direction, elements of the 82nd Airborne Division, as well as key units of the United States Air Force, are arriving today to take up defensive positions in Saudi Arabia.
The U.S. moved a massive war machine to the region. Pilots flew big choppers and bigger cargo planes to the Saudi desert. With soldiers, firepower, and gas masks.
What I saw in there was grenade launchers and M16s, just basic fighting goods, and they all had chemical warfare gear with them.
Saddam reacted by kidnapping foreign nationals by the thousands to hold as hostages. Guests, he called them. A few were lucky enough to escape. Jimmy Hawkins masqueraded as an Arab and escaped through Iraq.
I was in the desert about 10 or 12 kilometers.
Were you alone?
In the desert, yes. Fortunately, I had some black clothes, and I took off the Arab clothes, which were white, and put on the black clothes to go at night.
The UN ordered Saddam to free all hostages and withdraw totally from the nation he overran. Saddam did gradually free his hostages, but his soldiers stayed, while U.S. and other soldiers on the other side grew ever more tense.
I hadn't really thought about it a whole lot. I got a little spooked yesterday when I was thinking about it, but I'm here and I got to do it. It's just another part of the job.
The stress level was also high for the commander-in-chief.
You ought to read my mail. It is so heart-moving, supportive, and yet please bring my kid home. Please bring my husband home. And it's a tough question, but the president has to make the right decision.
When Saddam showed no sign of pulling back, the UN Security Council voted to give him a January 15th deadline. Secretary of State Baker presided.
12 votes in favor, 2 votes against, 1 abstention. The draft resolution has been adopted.
Still more Western and Arab forces arrived on the scene as the year drew to a close. They drilled in tanks and jeeps, and accidents claimed dozens of lives. There were numerous attempts at negotiations, but meetings were canceled. As 1990 wound down, war pressures were winding up.
I'm not optimistic. I see no evidence that Saddam Hussein is ready to comply fully, without condition, with the UN resolutions.
1990 wasn't supposed to be like this.
1990 can and should bring us closer to a period of genuine peace in world history.
There was a lot of talk about peace the first half of the year. After all, the superpowers had concluded the Cold War. Mikhail Gorbachev and George Bush summited in Washington and agreed to make sweeping arms reductions. The superpowers came so close together that in 1990, East and West Germany were able to merge. They set off fireworks in Berlin, and they rang a Liberty Bell. Berliners were singing a song of joy.
It's great. It's the greatest. I'm very happy.
Ute Bruma never thought she'd live to see unification.
No, nobody thought it. Nobody could think of this, but we hoped it.
Mikhail Gorbachev, who permitted the freedom movement in the East Bloc and allowed new freedoms in his own nation, was rewarded with the Nobel Peace Prize. But the many Soviet peoples used their freedoms to gripe about supply shortages and demand independence. Ethnic feuds broke out into the open, and that was blamed on Gorbachev, too.
Gorbachev, save the Armenians!
Gorbachev, stop the killing!
Gorbachev found himself facing so many problems at home, he had to send someone else to collect his Nobel Peace Prize. By year's end, hardliners in the Soviet Congress were attacking the Gorbachev government so much, Foreign Minister Shevardnadze quit in a huff. Call this my protest, he said. Don't try to talk me out of it, he said. It was a very Russian speech. Spanish was a language of freedom in 1990. In Nicaragua, the Marxist Daniel Ortega permitted free elections and lost them. This is Violeta Chamorro declaring victory. She inherited a busted economy and at year's end was wrestling with Marxist-controlled labor unions. Elsewhere in Central America,
today, democracy is restored. Panama is free.
Guillermo Andara was finally allowed to claim his election victory after the dictator Manuel Noriega fled a U.S. invasion force by running for the sanctuary of the Vatican Embassy. Crowds gathered outside to yell at him. Jay Saper was there when Noriega decided to surrender.
Manuel Noriega's surrender to U.S. authorities has set off an insane celebration here. Pots, pans, fireworks, car horns, people running wild in the streets, screaming at the top of their lungs.
He was a murderer, a drug trafficker. He ruined our country for 20 years. I'm so happy he's out finally.
Far from the maddening crowd, Noriega was jailed in Florida to await trial on drug smuggling charges. But at year's end, that trial was in doubt because the government was caught taping his conversations with his lawyers. The war on drugs caught another big fish in 1990.
Boston time, 25 cents. Extra, extra, read all about Murray Burger, Boston big time.
The FBI stung Washington Mayor Marion Barry. He took cocaine on their candid camera. When he was read his rights, all he could do was blame his situation on the woman who invited him to the room. Barry was convicted, but not of all charges, and though he canceled plans to run for re-election, he never did resign as mayor. Drug czar Bill Bennett quit his job first. Bennett said his job was done. Certainly Bennett was happy someone else would soon be mayor of the capital.
I mean, you got a real serious problem when the chief executive officer of a city, which has a drug problem, is taking crack.
Washington, D.C. had another scandal in 1990 when the president of American University was caught making obscene phone calls. Richard Berenson resigned in disgrace. A doctor was charged with murder in 1990 because he helped a patient kill herself. She pressed a button on a machine he built, and it poisoned her. Late in the year, charges were dropped against Jack Kevorkian, who insisted his patient died with dignity in a van.
She wanted it done as soon as possible, and it was irrelevant to her where. And the van was made as comfortable as possible.
40,000 people died in an earthquake in Iran in 1990. Plane crashes took lives as usual. Remember the Avianca wreck on Long Island? The two Northwest jets that collided on a runway in Detroit? A truck slid into a Greyhound bus east of Salt Lake City. There was an 80-vehicle smash-up northeast of Chattanooga. But the U.S. tragedy of the year was no accident. The fire that killed 87 at a Bronx social club was arson.
Well, initially, you couldn't really see too much. It was just, you know, heavy smoke and heat. And then as the guys started to knock the fire down, and other guys were crawling in, you just started to find one body after another. And, you know, most of the dead were up on the mezzanine, the second floor. There was no way out for them. It's a real shame.
The focus of tragedy in Israel and Lebanon shifted during 1990. Beirut calmed down for the first time in years as rival armies agreed to fight in the hills. In the occupied territories, Israeli soldiers shot down Arab protesters, rekindling the Intifada. There was an assassination in connection with the Palestinian issue, but it didn't happen in Israel. It happened in New York.
I just remember the head wound, the bleeding, people trying to stop the bleeding.
Meir Kahana, the American-born Israeli politician who advocated kicking all Arabs out of Israel and its occupied lands, was shot to death by an Egyptian emigre who was captured only after a gunfight on a Manhattan street. South Africa became a little freer in 1990.
I wish to put it plainly that the government has taken a firm decision to release Mr. Mandela unconditionally.
President Frederick de Klerk did free Nelson Mandela, apartheid's most famous foe. And having done so, he stood for Mandela resuming a forceful fight for equality.
We hold it as an inviolable principle that racism must be opposed by all the means that humanity has at its disposal.
President Bush invited both men to come visit the White House. Mandela to honor a man who was an authentic hero to most Americans, de Klerk to reward him for finally putting his country on the road away from racism. But when de Klerk came to town, demonstrators objected.
Support Mandela, not de Klerk.
Shame on Bush!
And the leader of the U.S. anti-apartheid movement sought to remind Americans how far South Africa still had to go.
Blacks still have no right to vote. The Group Areas Act is still in place. The Internal Securities Act is still in place. The Land Acts are still in place.
Randall Robinson was right, but as the year wound down, it was revealed President de Klerk intended to abolish most of those laws in a matter of weeks. 1990 had proven to be a pivot point in the fight against apartheid. The Iron Lady cried in 1990. Margaret Thatcher got misty-eyed as she contemplated the end of her lengthy stewardship of Britain. But despite dumping her over her reticence to join a larger trans-Europe government, British conservatives picked the man she wanted to be her successor. John Major came to Washington and said the close relationship between Britain and the U.S. would remain.
We've clearly illustrated yet again there's a very strong community of ideals as well as a community of interest.
Lech Walesa, founder of the Solidarity Movement that led the way to new East European freedoms, was elected president of Poland in 1990. And the Czech Lech Václav Havel was re-elected president of his country. East Bloc freedom moves continued clear through to December, when Albania, once as Marxist as any nation on earth, began tearing down its statues of Stalin. This is the year in review. It was the year President Bush broke his pledge of no new taxes.
And I feel that every once in a while, the president has to do something he doesn't like.
Bush endured a plunge in popularity to raise taxes and slash the federal debt, only to see members of his own party oppose him.
This bill, by raising taxes, will kill jobs, and I think that's not good for America.
The House Republican whip, responsible for lining up votes on Bush's behalf, instead lined up votes against him. With Republicans divided, Democrats passed their own plan, which Bush blocked by vetoing the next money bill.
I am not going to be a part of business as usual.
Parts of the government shut down. On one of the year's busiest tourist weekends, the Statue of Liberty was closed.
Attention visitors, due to the appropriation bill not being passed, the Statue of Liberty at Ellis Island will be closed until further notice.
Congressman Larry Smith was incensed at what he saw as a stunt.
Under his definition of necessary services, we had saw NASA launched the space shuttle this morning, but the Statue of Liberty is closed to Eagle Scouts.
Long days and nights later, agreement.
The yeas are 54, the nays are 45. The Budget Reconciliation Act is adopted.
Higher taxes, lower deficit. Sleepy Senate leaders Mitchell and Dole called Bush with the news.
Hope you'll get a little sleep now and a little rest, both of you.
We're almost asleep. The last 2 days we've been walking, but I think your biggest problem's over. Congress is going to leave.
The last word on new taxes from the man Bush beat in the last election by promising not to do this very thing.
I told the truth and I paid the price. Mr. Bush did not, and we are all now going to have to pay for that.
Now it was time for more elections. Voter outrage was expected on many issues. In particular, it was predicted that Senator Jesse Helms, leader of the right, would be ousted. It didn't happen.
If the liberal politicians think I've been a thorn in their sides in the past, they haven't seen anything yet.
This is how Pye Chamberlain analyzed the election the next morning.
Well over 90% of incumbent members of Congress were reelected. Three factors seemed to be at work. Voters talk about throwing the bums out, but not their own bum. Constituent service has become a fine art, helping people find lost benefit checks, get jobs, keep factories open. And finally, money. Senate challengers were outspent 3.5-1.
At the state level, it was different. Tax-raising governors mostly lost. Independents won governorships in Alaska and Connecticut. Presidential possible Mario Cuomo won a new term as New York governor, but had his victory speech interrupted by AIDS activists.
We've come a long way. Here. Only take me a minute.
We've come a long way since the Reagan years, but the ghost of politics past hung around in 1990. Federal prosecutor Dan Webb said this after John Poindexter, Ronald Reagan's national security advisor, was convicted of Iran-Contra crimes.
High men in government office ought not to be allowed to commit crimes to pursue their own self-interest.
But an appeals court threw out the Iran-Contra conviction of Oliver North. Congress heard revelatory testimony about favoritism and the handing out of housing grants in the Reagan years. Du Bois Gilliam told of life under Housing Secretary Samuel Pierce.
Nancy's Department of Housing and Urban Development was the best domestic political machine I've ever seen, and we dealt strictly politics.
Insider traitors were prosecuted in 1990. Andy Poland called us from the courthouse in New York when junk bond king Michael Milken copped a plea.
Milken's voice cracked as he pleaded guilty to six felony counts of securities law violations. He has agreed to pay $200 million in fines and turn over $400 million to the Securities and Exchange Commission. Afterwards, he broke down and cried.
Milken thought he'd get community service, but instead got a few years in prison. And there was also a surprise in store for accused savings and loan swindler Charles Keating. Bob Fuss in Los Angeles was on hand for that one.
Even though the district attorney indicated Keating could be released on his own recognizance, the judge, citing the seriousness of the case, ordered Keating jailed, pending the posting of $5 million bail.
Keating was behind bars for weeks until bail was reduced. Another accused SNL figure was Neil Bush, the president's son, a director of a Denver thrift who said he warned the man who hired him that he was honest.
I made it very clear that if he expected me to be on the board for political influence or for lobbying or for anything other than what the normal responsibilities would be of an outside director, he could forget it.
But what Neil Bush did do was support having the SNL lend money to his own business partner. The year ended with sick SNLs mostly stabilized, but with officials predicting the bailout would cost taxpayers more than the Second World War. Zsa Zsa Gabor did time in 1990 for slapping a Beverly Hills cop. She worked as a prison clerk despite having trouble alphabetizing.
I had to file, which I don't even know the ABC, so they wrote out for me the ABCDC, and then I learned the ABC, and then I filed, but very well. They were complimenting me. I done a great job.
Scandal hit the recording industry when a Grammy was recalled. Milli Vanilli, a dynamic pop duo, was exposed as a fake. The dancers weren't really the singers.
I joined the best band in the world.
Paul McCartney got a Lifetime Achievement Grammy in 1990.
And I got to take this opportunity, now that I got this award here, to thank John, George, and Ringo for being beautiful people.
The raunchy rap group 2 Live Crew was busted on obscenity charges. Leader Luther Campbell defended the group.
We don't talk about violence, sex, and having sexual corpses and all this. We don't talk about that kind of stuff. Gang rape, we don't talk about that. We talk about, you know, basic things that they discuss in the locker room.
Campbell was acquitted, but a man who sold 2 live albums did not beat the rap. At year's end, he was planning an appeal, and they were still performing numbers like this one, which comments on the group's notoriety.
Now let me break it all down and tell the story. When they say 2 live, your mama gets worried. When they speak of us, the negative gets mentioned. But we don't care. Thanks for your attention.
The 60s have been over a long time, but rock musicians still die of overdoses. In 1990, it happened for Brent Midland of the Grateful Dead.
I will survive to endless misery.
Del Shannon committed suicide in 1990. He was despondent over loss of fame.
Why in Mr. Haven saving all my love for you?
Singing great Sarah Vaughan died. Jazz also lost drummer Art Blakey.
When they're rocking.
You mean they're rocking?
I'm telling you, they're rocking.
And Pearl Bailey.
You never seen such a whooping and a booping till the break of dawn.
Who can take a sunrise?
Sammy Davis Jr. died. Dancer, singer, actor, comic. One man whom it was accurate to describe with the word entertainer.
The Candyman.
The movies lost Greta Garbo and Irene Dunne and Ava Gardner.
Look, mister, whoever you are, let me jump to my own conclusions, huh?
And Barbara Stanwyck.
Don't you think we ought to go to bed?
You're certainly a funny girl for anybody to meet who's just been up the Amazon for a year.
Good thing you weren't up there 2 years.
Billionaire Malcolm Forbes died just a few months after writing a book about other famous people's famous last words. It was called They Went That Away. CBS lost its longtime leader, Bill Paley, and its longtime anchor, Douglas Edwards. And the patron saint of game shows died, Bill Cullen.
My favorite kind, everyone wanted something, but Mrs. Young, our champion, with $1,412, and the most surprised look on your face of anyone I've seen in a long time, you are still champion.
But in the entertainment world, one loss was more sudden, more widely felt than any other.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows?
The creator of the Muppets caught a bug, delayed getting treatment, and never recovered. Jim Henson died decades too young. And for many at his New York funeral, it was almost too much to bear. Tammy Burke, a fan.
When they played the song The Rainbow Connection from the movie, that's where I really got sad. But so I think he was the Rainbow Connection. He's got... He'll help keep the child in all of us alive. But I'm just so sad that he's gone.
We lost the composer of Appalachian Spring in 1990, and not only Aaron Copland, but the conductor who performed Copland's music around the world, Leonard Bernstein. Copland had stopped composing years before. Bernstein retired from the podium just a few days before his death. These good friends are forever paired in many beloved recordings. This is the Year in Review. It was the year Supreme Court Justice William Brennan retired, leaving Thurgood Marshall as the sole remaining liberal. President Bush nominated David Souter, a judge from New Hampshire with almost no paper trail to show his leanings. He didn't reveal much at his confirmation hearings either.
I think for me to start answering that question, in effect, is for me to start discussing the concept of Roe v. Wade.
The Senate Judiciary Committee decided it liked him, even though it knew little about him.
The nomination of David Hackett Souter will be reported to the floor of the United States Senate.
And the Senate confirmed him. As 1990 ended, America was still waiting for rulings that would clear up the mystery about how David Souter would vote. Congress passed the Clean Air Act in 1990 and a bill to protect the rights of the handicapped, but a civil rights bill to make it easier to sue discriminating employers failed. White House demonstrators pressured the president to support it.
1, 2, 3, 4. We don't want to wait no more. Sign the bill, George.
But George vetoed what he called a quota bill, and the override stood. A ban on smoking hit passenger flights in 1990 and took hold with few problems, despite smokers' fears when it began.
6 hours is a long time, but I don't think we've had to fly that long yet. That'll drive me crazy. It's going to make me nuts.
We took a census in 1990 and found Americans moving to the Sun Belt. But for many, what counted about the census was what it missed. Longston Edwards is a Chicago street person who was never counted.
Like, I'm not even here. Feel lonely, like I'm not even a person. I'd like to be counted, too.
The Japanese bought more American businesses in 1990. Land in Hawaii, cattle ranches in Montana, studios in Hollywood. But for this 7-Eleven customer, the biggest Japanese takeover was of the convenience store chain's parent company, Southland Corporation.
The point of it is it's an economic war, not a military war, and the people in this country don't realize it or won't pay any attention to it, so the whole thing's going to hell.
The longest economic expansion in U.S. history fizzled in 1990. Recession took hold. Officials refused to use the R word, but economists did, and the people most directly affected knew about it. Charles Hammond, a panhandler, said December giving was down.
The economy's hurting everything. People are not going to donate to me if they can't buy their kids ice cream.
The Gulf crisis made things worse. Oil traders worried that supplies would be interrupted drove fuel prices up a third, even though OPEC suspended production limits and there was actually a world oil glut. Somebody paid more than $80 million for a Van Gogh in 1990. Van Gogh sold only one painting his whole life. The year began so brightly for NASA.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and liftoff of the Space Shuttle Discovery with the Hubble Space Telescope.
13 years in the making, the Hubble Space Telescope was supposed to see what no telescope had seen before. NASA space science boss Leonard Fisk could barely restrain himself.
The astronomers were starting to tingle again.
Rob Navius was at the Cape when Discovery took Hubble aloft.
Discovery starting its roll program to flip over onto its back. Almost $3 billion of space hardware streaking uphill.
It was all downhill from there. Someone had used a measuring instrument upside down. The Hubble was built with a warped mirror. It took good pictures, but not as good as build. And the whole year went like that. NASA was grounded half the year with hydrogen fuel leaks. When that was fixed, a second astronomy mission was constrained by computer failures.
Wait for me!
Some unusual films were made in 1990, such as Dick Tracy, filmed in primary colors like you see in the comics. And this one, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. If you don't understand it, we can't explain it. But perhaps we will take a crack at Twin Peaks, the weird TV series of 1990. There's a serial killer who appears to people in dreams, and owls that are not what they seem, and an abundance of donuts, and... oh, forget it. We saved the northern spotted owl in 1990 by limiting logging in America's oldest forests, and tuna companies promised to save the dolphins by switching to new nets. These sea lions came back for a return engagement on the waterfront in San Francisco. And Humphrey the humpback whale once again had to ask for directions to get out of that harbor. The 49ers won the Super Bowl in 1990, and the Cincinnati Reds won the World Series without the help of Pete Rose, who went to jail for tax evasion. Scandal also yanked George Steinbrenner off his own team.
Mr. Steinbrenner will have no further involvement in the management of the New York Yankees or in the day-to-day operations of that club.
Steinbrenner was banished for hanging out with shady characters. We said goodbye to America's oldest major league ballpark in 1990. These Chicago fans sang Na Na Hey Hey Kiss Her Goodbye at the last Comiskey Park game. At night, police stood guard to stop vandalism by souvenir hunters and caught a guy trying to steal a base. McDonald's made a promise in 1990 to phase out its bad for the planet plastic packages, but most fast food continued to be as caloric as ever. The jogging president called on fellow Republican Arnold Schwarzenegger to get Americans pumped up about good health.
President Bush and I want to put every one of you out there in America on a fitness program. We want you all to pump up. We all want you to lose those extra inches. We want you to get fit, and we want to do it right now.
But there were conflicting signals about good health when the president said things that were vociferous about vegetables cruciferous.
I do not like broccoli, and I haven't liked it since I was a little kid, and my mother made me eat it, and I'm president of the United States, and I'm not going to eat any more broccoli.
Spin Dr. Barbara Bush saved the day by calling on parents to have their kids follow her husband's example and eat broccoli until they become president. The First Lady also scored at the summit, inviting Reza Gorbachev, a poli-sci professor by trade, to join her in addressing commencement exercises at Wellesley. Reza agreed and told a sea of female graduates she expected great things from them.
Пусть вам сопутствует удача и счастье.
May good luck and happiness be with you.
Добрых вам свершений.
I wish you many good accomplishments. Thank you.
Barbara Bush made the same point, but not the same way.
Somewhere out in this audience may even be someone who will one day follow in my footsteps and preside over the White House as the president's spouse, and I wish him well.
And that's the year in review. Executive producer David O'Zeal. Our thanks to Ron Colbert, Rod Bauer, James Minicello, Doug Levy, and Jim Ludwin. We gratefully acknowledge the assistance of the Unistar Radio Network and National Public Radio, without whose assistance this program would not have been possible. I'm Howard Dykus. Have a great 1991. This is the UPI Radio Network.